This is Hospitality Help with Cindy Race. In each podcast episode, Cindy shares with you over 40 years of industry experience, from what employers look for to hire that right person, to tips on how to prepare yourself for that job you want in the back or front of the house. So if you want some help, you've come to the right place. Hospitality Help. Welcome back to Hospitality Help. This episode, we're going to talk about growing your own. Hello, Cindy.
Hi there.
So, there's discussion on, how to fill in certain positions. What are the most difficult, challenging positions that you find to find candidates for? Is there anything out there? Because it can't all be easy, right?
Right. I would say it is equally difficult to find an assistant general manager or a sous chef.
They
just don't
exist. You're talking about front and the back, right?
Right.
So let's talk about the front.
Sure. So
assistant general manager then. Why is it difficult to find any of those?
So think about this. A server at a nice restaurant in San Francisco might make $400 a night waiting tables. And maybe they work 6.5 or 7 hours at most. They're responsible for their station. And certainly they work hard. But if you're thinking, oh, gee, this is a great server. Maybe we can, get them into management, whatever. At $400 a night, that's almost $100,000 a year. And restaurants don't pay assistant general managers that much money per year, right? So it's hard to find someone that wants to transition from being a server into a manager, because a manager is so much about, lack of a better term, babysitting. Mm-hmm. You're going to work more hours. You're probably not going to make as much money, and you're going to have a lot more responsibility. It's like sometimes employers call me asking me to find them an assistant general manager. And it's like, I can't help you. And I think they're shocked, right? When they get to the end of the conversation, like they're willing to pay me thousands of dollars to help them find this position, right? And I can't help them. I've had an assistant general manager position in San Francisco for 6 months. I've sent the employer probably two candidates. They pay $90,000 a year and I can't find anyone. Hmm. And I think technology is competing also. Meaning, there's nights and weekends off, and they pay well. And then if you're talking about a straight standalone restaurant, it's all of a sudden, you're working nights and weekends, 12-hour shifts, and you have all this responsibility. People are calling you on your day off, blah, 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 blah. So how do you grow your own,
Yeah, how do you grow
your own? You have to find that needle in a haystack yourself. Mm. Identify someone on your team that you see has the curiosity and the energy and the potential for you to invest your time in training them, because, the ultimate goal is to become an owner, a general manager, a food and beverage director. The AGM role is pretty temporary, mm-hmm. right? I mean, everyone's wanting to climb that ladder. Mm-hmm. And it's on the other side too, back of house. I mean, trying to find a sous chef in San Francisco, a lot of our cooks are Latin. They work two full-time jobs, right? So they work by the hour. They don't want to go on salary. They don't want to learn computer skills. They don't want to have to babysit people. They don't want to work, for less money per hour. And ultimately that's what happens when you go on salary. So It's really challenging. You've got to always be looking through your team and kind of thinking about who you can groom mm-hmm. to step into that next role, or streamline your operation where you don't need those positions anymore, which that's hard for people to even really wrap their arms around and think about it.
Have you seen success using that model?
I think we're going more in that direction. Oh. Less labor, more self-service. Certainly the Bay Area has great ingredients, which is a plus. And so I think there's going to be more things where you go to the counter and order and you get a table number and then someone runs out your food.
Mm-hmm. Do you see more, is it easier for the back of the house to get filled up than the front of the house? Is that something, is that trendy?
That's hard to say. I mean, for years I would have said sous chef, hardest, by far, hardest position to fill. But in the last year, I'm feeling like AGM is harder to fill. Now, that could be because I've deterred so many people from even asking me for a sous chef, right? And now I'm hitting the wall on trying to find, you know, front of the house managers. Mm-hmm. It's just hard across the board.
Right.
It really is.
You know, part of it, maybe companies themselves changing up their org chart.
Exactly.
And kind of refining that. But, I mean, there is an importance in that role, isn't it? The assistant, I mean, who do you have
when
a GM goes out or, you know, your executive chef, you know, decides to just calls it a night, you know, that happens too, right? So, I mean, there is an importance of that, but also just goes along the line of, are you training folks to be able to fill in those roles?
I mean, there's some very successful companies that have multi-units, right? And they also have deep enough pockets to create a bench, which, I mean, a lot of these places don't have a safety net, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're really working close to the bone. And I recognize that. I mean, the pie is only so big, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when they do have dollars to spend to create the bench, when there's a hole, they're able to fill it. And sometimes I wonder, is there like an economy of scale? Like having one restaurant feels like reinventing the wheel, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then is it better to have two? But, you know, what if that second one isn't really successful? At what point do you kind of even things out? Is it 5 units where it's like, oh, well, one's underperforming, maybe the other four are doing better? I don't know. And can you cross train staff so that, hey, you know, Tom over at restaurant one is going to be leaving. We can move Dave over there for 6 months while we identify who the next chef will be, or, you know what I mean? It feels like restaurants are always running with a lot of Band-Aids.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the industry, right? Trying to kind of fill holes when needed, while at the same time, well, a lot of times they're not necessarily building within, training from, you know, from what your core group is, and being able to have them kind of take on that role.
Right.
What
I mean, I think a lot of things have changed too in the last decade. I mean, all the Cordon Bleu cooking schools closed, which, you know, I don't think there's as many young people coming into the field.
Mm-hmm.
That has certainly hindered our growth and development of cooks. I think young people, many of them have so much access to information at their fingertips that they don't really see the merit of staying in the same job for as long as someone in my generation did. They have more choices, and the restaurant industry is hard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not what you see on Food Network. You know, it's hot. You're standing on your feet for long periods of time. You're moving, you know, heavy things in awkward ways. You know, you're trying to get to the back of the walk-in and moving, you know, all these different big buckets of, you know, peeled potatoes and, you know, straddling this and that to try and find the thing you're looking for. And it's hard. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a declining amount of people that are entering the field. So,
interesting.
One thing I love about San Francisco is we are definitely the city of innovation. And I think the hospitality industry has some real challenges right now with staffing. And I feel confident that even though it's hard, we're going to get through it. And I predict that technology is going to help us through it, whether it is automating some of the chopping and dicing in the back of the house, or how the customer gets their food, but it has to change, or they're not going to be able to sustain this. I mean, there are, you know, lots of restaurants that open every year, and there's lots of restaurants that close every year.
Is the sous chef, assistant GM, is that something that somebody is open to that change, will need to be open to that change? Where do you see the role of that, like, in terms of the person's character and passion of that position, like that will need to get into that? Are they somebody that do they have to have some sort of determination? Do they have some sort of talent? What are some of the traits that you see a sous chef, assistant GM needs to have to fulfill that role? Because it's definitely not a line cook, definitely right. Not an executive chef,
right?
But what is it that in particular of that position that requires a certain type of person to right. fill that role?
Right. You know, the first thing that comes to mind is curiosity and a passion for learning and growing. I'm thinking about some of the sous chefs that I know, and, you know, ones that have stayed in positions for some decent time. I think there's a good mentor above them, someone who has enough going on that there's so much for that sous chef to glean from that executive chef, whether it's leadership or just food knowledge or the approach to creativity and how you end up with a dish that's spot on, that process. I mean, you don't just go to bed with a cookbook under your pillow and wake up and you're an executive chef. I mean, there's a process, and I think having that great mentor is important. And on the front of the house side, you know, I think it's also a mentor, and maybe it's a passion for wine or excellence in service, or someone who really is thrilled mm-hmm. by delivering exquisite service. I mean, you can get exquisite service in a truck stop, right? Mm-hmm. This doesn't have to be luxury dining we're talking about. I mean, it's real hospitality. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. It's real hospitality. People who are really driven to excel and deliver that moment mm-hmm. or that experience, or and teaching others how to do it. I mm-hmm. mean, not everyone's a good teacher, mm-hmm. you know? Unfortunately, there's more downside often, especially in today's market, okay. where there's so many people that, you know, don't show, don't call, flake. I'm hearing so many stories about, you know, just trying to mitigate that, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that's why all these other companies have popped up, mm-hmm. right? These on-demand, you know, line right. cooks and temp to hire things, right, you know, right. and there's a lot of people that are actually making a career out of that.
Right.
Right? They get to bounce around to all these different cool places and just plug holes and meet people and see how they make, you know, whatever, a pork chop over here or, right. you know, chicken right. over there, or, hey, their Caesar salad's cool or whatever it is, right?
You know, definitely in terms of being open to change is something that, you know, we kind of discussed it earlier with you know, changing the org chart of a business. But, you know, is that something that's, can that really happen? Is that something that's yes. sustainable?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
I think there's a couple of really good examples that I've seen. One is combining executive chef and general manager to a food and beverage director. The other is eliminating or reducing a pastry chef's position to become half pastry chef, half sous chef, right? So combining tasks. So let me talk about food and beverage director for a second.
Okay,
so say this is going to sound ridiculous to people outside of the Bay Area, but say you pay your general manager $100,000 and your executive chef $100,000. That's not really a lot of money in the Bay Area. But if you eliminated one of those positions, and let's say you move your executive chef to become the food and beverage director, so now that individual oversees front of house and back of house, and you pay him $150,000, you've actually cut your expenses by $50,000, and you have now increased that chef's job to a level where it's much easier for that person to thrive in the Bay Area, right? So he's not looking over his shoulder trying to find a better paying job. So that's one thing I'm seeing. Mm. The other is, I mean, when I moved here 25 years ago, every good restaurant had a pastry chef. You don't see pastry chefs anymore unless, you know, it's a rare position to have on someone's team. You know, the luxury dining restaurants, they have pastry chefs, but most restaurants don't. If they do have some sort of pastry person, oftentimes they have now split that job in half, and that pastry person does other things that a sous chef would do, like ordering and inventory and coding invoices and scheduling. And so they're getting more production out of that sous chef person. So I do see change in the org chart. And some of them, I think those are good ways to approach it. Mm-hmm. I think it's sustainable.
Well, that's great to have that insight, because I, just coming from that world, you would go to a place, you would have your sous chef, you have your executive chef, you would also have really an executive pastry chef.
Right.
Right? So good to kind of bring out in the open in terms of just the role of just org charts within a business.
Right.
You know, you may be skilled at doing pastry, but, you know, there may be opportunities to expand too, not just doing pastry, but also being incorporated into the whole general scheme of things right. within a business.
Right. I had a chef partner call me, I don't know, maybe a year and a half ago. And he said, you know, Cindy, we're really struggling to find a general manager. And his business partner was a silent partner. And I said, you know, honestly, what I think you should do is I think you should absorb that position. Okay, you're the executive chef partner. I think don't hire a general manager. Just stop looking. You take on some more responsibility. You know, give some more responsibility to others in your kitchen and give yourself a raise, which totally worked. I mean, he felt like he had more control and he was making more money and the restaurant was saving money. So I think it's oftentimes as human beings, we just get stuck. This is the way it's always been.
Right.
So this is what we have to do. Exactly. Right. Well, we have hit the time in the industry where we have to look at new ways to do things. That's just the reality of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think society's going to catch up with it. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember as a kid going to the gas station with my parents and, you know, we never had to get out of the car and Joe would wash your windshield and check your oil and pump your gas. And then it seemed like, you know, well, who knows? A couple of years later, it's the same price for gas, but now Dad's getting out and pumping the gas and washing the windshield, right? And I think that's just what we're going to see in the restaurant industry as time goes by. There's going to be a lot more self-service. Mm. It doesn't mean that the quality is going to be bad, mm-hmm. Especially with our great ingredients. It just means that, you know, we're going to have to do more of it ourselves.
Well, hopefully we could explore a little bit more of this whole self-service thing on another podcast.
Sounds great.
All right. But thank you again, Cindy, for kind of shedding a little bit of light in terms of that whole part of the business where, you know, we always think about sous chefs and assistant general managers, but we don't necessarily kind of look at how difficult it is to fill those spots. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Hospitality Help with Cindy Race. Cindy is the sole proprietor of Foley & Fitzgerald, a premier boutique hospitality recruiting and placement agency based in the San Francisco Bay Area since 1995. For more information, please visit foleyandfitzgerald.com or follow on Facebook at Foley and Fitzgerald.